Launching from an Etherport at RBN, cruising at light speed, here's your host, Steve Starrs.
Hey, welcome everybody to the show today. Great one coming up here. And I'm going to just say I'm glad to be back on Monday. As usual, every Monday I'm here on RBN, and I enjoy being with you folks, and I hope you got through the weekend. Yes, there's a lot going on, so much. And, you know, we're going to have a special guest. I believe he'll be probably calling in pretty quick here. And I think you're going to really enjoy this show. It's going to be Chris Emery. And Chris is, he basically is one of the top journalists that I know of. He works with freemindfilms.com, and he's an expert on a lot of things. He's been covering stuff for a long time. So, you know, I think you're going to have a really good show with him. We'll kind of wait in his call, and we'll get him on just as soon as he's here with us. And, you know, so many things happening, of course, as you know, the we've seen, you know, what's happening with the just the lawfare and the incredible destruction of our system. And the thing that shocks me the most about what I'm seeing is that Americans really aren't waking up like they should be. And for a person like myself who's been a journalist in this for a long time, I'm going to bring Chris on pretty quick here, but I want to tell you about him. He and I share one thing in common, and a motivational gift, if you like, and that is that both of us have tried to warn people about what's happening and get to the truth, and we haven't been able to do it. And I think Chris is with us. But Chris, hold on just a second, buddy. I'm going to introduce you. Just give everybody an idea of the kind of work you've been doing. He's been working in television and radio for 44 years. He goes back before 9/11, for instance, when he was talking about all these things, like a lot of you do. You've been aware of this stuff for a long time. But he's co-hosted an acclaimed internet-based radio show, Radio Free Oklahoma, for 4 years. His interest in documentary film production was created over 40 years ago. He continues to discover a consistent pattern of deception within the U.S. government's official narratives. The UW campus in Sterling Hall bombing, Madison, Wisconsin in 1970. Remember that? You probably don't. But Johnson & Johnson, Tylenol murder, Chicago, 1982. The Ruby Ridge shootout, August 1992. The 1993 New York City World Trade Center attacks. That was the first time around in 93, friends. Waco, Texas massacre, April 93. Oklahoma City bombing, April 1995, which we're going to be talking about in a lot. The U.S. Navy accidental shootdown of the TWA Flight 800 over Long Island back in 1996. And, of course, the 9/11 attacks in New York City, Washington, D.C., September 2001. Then also, he's been following everything that's been going on with the virus, you know, CHV-19, Big Pharma, CDC, FDA, the World Health Organization, March 2020 to present, the CIA, MI6, the IDF trained Ukraine troops, and the NATO-funded hot war between Russia and Ukraine. So, you know, Chris has been following this all this time. He's got some work that he's coming up with. Well, we're not going to go into it yet because he's still in the process. So, I don't think he's a stranger to RBN. I just don't. He's probably hadn't been around for a while, and he's getting back out. Now, listen, you can go to his website and see A Noble Life for free there. Don't go to YouTube. Go to the website and watch it there, because that helps fund Chris's work. And I'll tell you, as a documentary producer like this, it's hard to get funding, friends. So visit that site and see the film for free. If you have not seen A Noble Lie, A Noble Lie, you need to see that. That is in, you know, Freedom and Truth People's 101 category. And you can go to, it's called Free Mind Films, freemindfilms.com, freemindfilms.com. Write that down, and you can watch the film for free. We're going to play a clip of it. Okay, so I've talked, and I'm excited, you can tell, because Chris is just such a great guest. I've had him on some other shows. He's probably not a complete stranger to RBN, but it's been a while maybe since he's been back. Chris Emery. Chris, are you there, buddy?
I am, Steve. Thank you. That was a fantastic introduction. I'm very humbled. Thank you so much. It's great to be able to put the IMDb.com profile. That's the go-to website for a lot of professionals, you know, in front of and behind the camera. So I put that biography together a couple of years ago, and try to be concise. So what direction do you want to go? I'm pretty much on your lead right now.
Hey, well, we can go any direction that you'd like to, but Chris, is, ladies and gentlemen, is a great professional. He's right on time, as you can tell. He's very elaborate and detailed. He doesn't go out trying to shoot something and create a narrative around it. He digs into the information and lets the story tell itself, but he finds the things that you need to know. And I just a polished professional. And I've worked with a lot of them in my time, and Chris is at the top, I'll tell you. So, Chris, you know, you and I got acquainted with your work watching A Noble Lie, which is a great film. People can see that for free. Remember, at freemindfilms.com. If you haven't seen it, send out the link also if you have. And you're working on so many other things. You've got a film called State of Mind about PSYOPs and Shadow Ring and some great guests, people like G. Edward Griffin, John Rappaport, James Perloff, and Charlotte Itzerby. I'm just dropping names, but some of our people might know who those folks are. But Chris, you know, let's just talk a little bit about, you know, how you got into all this, and let's go into you know, I've got the clip ready to play, the trailer from A Noble Lie, so we can kind of get into that, because a lot of people still don't really understand what happened in Oklahoma City and how, as you warned, if we don't stop these people, it's going to get worse. And that's what happened with 9/11, right?
That's correct. May I make one little caveat, a correction?
Sure.
On the title of the film is called A Noble Lie. Excuse me, Noble Lie, Oklahoma City, 1995. Oddly enough, and this is synchronicity that we've experienced consistently over the last 20 years, the film A Noble Lie was actually written and produced by Richard Grove, who helped us on our second film. And if it wasn't for Richard and his fiancée at the time, Lisa Arbuchowski, who's now his wife, there's no way we would have gotten that second film out. And it's called State of Mind, Psychology of Control. Richard was on our short list of people to interview. And he came aboard and did a wonderful job interviewing. And then one of our writers had to step aside for family personal reasons and wasn't able to finish his contract of writing the script for that film. Richard stepped in like a trooper and just did an absolutely wonderful job. But through Tragedy and Hope, his website is absolutely fantastic, he actually released a film called A Noble Lie 2 years before we even came up with the concept of doing the Oklahoma City film. So,
wow.
I know, it's just weird how things like that happen, but to this day, and I've seen an interview with Richard and some mutual friends in the media industry, he still promotes our DVD on the Blu-ray format on his website. It's literally on his camera shot when he's live on Rumble and several other networks, so I can't thank Richard enough for the job he did, and his wife did the narration for us. So, having said that, getting back to what got me into this, well, I was bilingual when I was a young child. I was born in Italy, and I had to learn English as a second language. And so as a child, you were very inquisitive. You want to know about, well, why does this mean this and so forth. And I was brought up in a family of just, we had fun. My dad was, you know, made us take trips in a good way. He always encouraged us to take vacations. And he was an engineer for Westinghouse for 17 years. So it was more the analytical end of looking at things. And my mom was the kind of the counterbalance. She had a good sense of humor. So it was a very healthy family environment. And we were just always inquisitive, as my brother and I as kids. We learned how things were built. We read books. We, you know, learned to ask questions, not in an obnoxious way, but in a good way. It's constructive. So when you become an adult, you have that fertile foundation to say, hey, you know, this isn't quite making sense, and why? And then, as I lay out in my biography on the IMDb, there was a consistent pattern of deception. I says, all right, this is not by mistake. This isn't just happenstance. This is by design. And the first job I had working in the basically the media industry was a photographer with Big Ten Football. And I was able to start my own business and ran it for 8.5 years. And I traveled extensively throughout the Midwest with the University of Wisconsin-Madison, the Badger football team. And so yeah. I learned how to put together, you know, the business model and how to run things and how to get things done and organize. And then having the chance to work in front of the camera and then 14 years later behind the camera. So it just carried on. But what I found, and this is something I think your listeners need to know, don't believe what you, obviously this is a very, you know, concise version of it, but don't believe what you hear on TV. Only about 25% of it is actually true. And yeah. Why do I say that? Because I actually had a chance to work at CBS. So, having said that, let's go in on, you know, what direction you want to move.
Yeah, well, we're going to move on in and play that clip coming up in a second here. That's a trailer from A Noble Lie, because we'll talk a lot about that. You know, my thanks, by the way, to your family for helping you get such a great start. And so many other people can credit their families for being a big part of this. And friends, you know, Chris is on the cutting edge. He's got things he's working on. You've heard all the stories he's covered going back before 9/11. He's been questioning the government. But the whole thing with, you know, Oklahoma City, which still is really kind of vague in a lot of people's minds. They don't realize that that trial was moved to Denver in order to create a complete sham and a scam out of it all. And I think we got enough time. Let's just go ahead and play the clip and get that out of the way and then go from there. How's that sound? Let's go with that. All right.
On April 19th, 1995, at 9:02 a.m., explosions tore through the Alfred P. Murrow Building in downtown Oklahoma City, ripping through the consciousness of America. 169 people were left dead and hundreds more injured. The Oklahoma City bombing was the largest act of terrorism on American soil until 9/11. America had a new demon. We're now being told that this demon is emerging from its slumber. Since that day of horror, groundbreaking new information has come to light. So provocative, so explosive, that it threatens to shatter everything we thought we knew about the true nature of terrorism.
We'll pursue every lead and use every possible resource to bring the people responsible to justice.
I was sitting at my desk there on the 8th floor. I felt the building start shaking, lights went out, debris started falling on my desk. Something hit me in the back of the head and knocked me out before the truck bomb went off. What that tells you is that there were other explosive devices in the building that actually brought the building down.
It's an earthquake. Everybody get down on underneath on the floor. And I had sat there and I thought, no, it doesn't feel like an earthquake. 7 or 8 seconds later, I felt this explosion.
Only an imbecile would look at that damage pattern and not understand that it couldn't have been made by a truck bomb, because a truck bomb is going to release its energy simultaneously in every direction.
The record clearly shows that Dr. Jolly and West consulted Timothy McVeigh's defense team. Dr. West had previously been psychiatrist and consulted for Patty Hearst, Saran Saran, and Jack Ruby.
We know that Jolly and West was considered to be the number two mind control expert in North America under only Dr. Ewing Cameron. We know that he was McVeigh's doctor from the time around the trial to the time he was incarcerated in Terre Haute, Indiana, and then executed.
Even though the spin was, it was the right wing, it was the militias, McVeigh was involved in all this stuff, he did it because of Waco, and you know, all this stuff that the media was pumping out, none of it panned out. The militia in those days would have guarded the Murrah Building. Now, they wouldn't have guarded the UN.
I wrote a letter to the district attorney, Macy, told him what I had seen and that I wanted to testify in the grand jury. I got a letter back from him telling me that the grand jury did not want to hear anything I had to say about the bombing.
It is every patriotic American's duty, every man, woman, and child's responsibility to research the facts contained in this film, to verify for yourself that this information is true, and that the rabbit hole goes even deeper, and then take action to bring the criminals that perpetrated this attack to justice. If we don't, they're going to win and bring down our republic in the process.
There you are, A Noble Lie, great film. You can go to freemindfilms.com. You can watch it for free. Don't watch it on YouTube. Watch it right at the site, freemindfilms.com. Chris Emery is our guest today, and he is was backing and behind that at one of the LLCs that he helped start and found and worked on that film. And Chris, you know, it's still an immortal classic film that people should see if they haven't seen it yet, or send it out to other people. It's still very important. Our history as to how all this stuff started needs to still be exposed, doesn't it?
Absolutely, and we have the 29-year anniversary coming up this April 19th.
Yep.
And so, you know, if you do the math, we're talking three generations that have been born since then. So one thing, you know, I was listening to the soundtrack, and, you know, as a filmmaker, we have memory recall and where those interviews were shot and how we did the post edit and so forth. And three of those individuals in that trailer have since passed on. The very first gentleman that you saw or heard, B.Z. Lawton, was actually a survivor, get this, on the eighth floor. And he's signing some papers at his desk. He worked for was the Department of Native American and Indian Affairs and their housing to get affordable housing for them on their reservations. And he's sitting there literally a minute or two after 9 a.m. And concrete from the ninth floor, the slab on the ninth floor, falls through the drop ceiling. And the drop ceiling's 3 feet below the slab above. And it knocks him out. And it was so bad that he had bleeding coming out the back of his head. He was knocked out for, he said, probably for about 10 minutes. The explosion happened. And luckily, he wasn't in that gouge, that, you know, the infamous picture that you saw when it happened. Right. And several of his friends fell down into that massive debris pile and were crushed. And some of them, I don't want to get into the graphic detail, but we saw at the medical examiner's office, the film crew was able to access some of those pictures and the records, and by the benevolence of amazing staff there at the Oklahoma State Medical Examiner's Office. Anyway, we were able to put the whole picture of, like I mentioned in this previous interview we had with your group last week, mm-hmm. literally in the months and the weeks and the days and the hours and the minutes, what happened at that building and then following. So we knew after 8.5 years that, yes, there was a conscientious plan to plan, commit, and cover up this case. I mean, it went the full 360. So we were given access to, like I mentioned, 142 boxes of legal documents that were quashed by Merrick Garland, our current attorney general, who was a special U.S. prosecutor assigned to that case to prosecute it. And it was none other than the lead counsel for Timothy McVeigh, Stephen Jones, who I met with for about 3.5 hours at his office in Enid, Oklahoma. And he knew that we were going to want to do a good job on this film. And he gave us full and unfettered access to all of those boxes, which were, at the time, at the University of Texas at the Law Library Archives, which is next to the LBJ Presidential Library on campus there. Oh. And I had lived in Austin for 16 years, so I knew exactly where it was. And through the course of about 8 months, Wendy Painting, who was the young female on that voiceover, I don't think your viewers were able to see the video. I think we just heard mm-hmm. the audio. She was the one that was instrumental in getting an apartment in Austin and going through those records. And I paid her a visit 3 or 4 times from Oklahoma City, and I saw the kind of work that she was doing and did a phenomenal job. We'll be greatly indebted to her. The point is that as a film crew, we had to paint a picture of what made sense, what happened, and what didn't happen. And I can tell you definitively that the official narrative is vacuous. There's nothing to support it other than the fact that 168 people, including 3 unborn children, were brutally murdered. And it's our duty as a film crew to remember the deaths of these people in a truth versus a lie. And that was basically the genesis. The gentleman that did the voiceover for that was James Lane. He was our executive director. And I touch base with him to this day, even though I'm out of state. I touch base with him probably once or twice every 6 months and say, hey, how you doing? And he gave up his house. We turned 2 bedrooms of his house into the production studio where we did the editing, as well as our radio show, where we did a radio show for the 4 years during that the genesis of the movie. So anyway,
great people.
There was a lot. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I'm just going to say we've got a break coming up pretty quick here, but a lot of great people went into this and did a great job. FreeMindFilms.com. If you haven't seen A Noble Lie, you've got to see it. And you can actually send that link out to other people because it's a great film. Hey, we got a break coming up, Chris, and we're going to go on and keep getting deeper into this. Stay with us, friends, right here on RBN.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats. And even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low-quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free-range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. But I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork raised the way nature intended.
Here's some interesting news. Due to all the recent claims about possible nuclear wars, viruses, solar flares, and civil unrest, people are scrambling to prepare and stockpile food. But the one thing out of reach for many is an underground bunker. Until now. Because you can now have a 3D printed underground bunker in just one day. An excavator digs a hole in your backyard, and 3DBunkers.com shows up in a small truck and sets up their 3D printer under a tent completely undetected. They can print as many rooms as you want at a fraction of the cost compared to traditional metal bunkers. 3D Bunkers uses polymer concrete, which is 5 times stronger than regular cement. YouTube 3DBunkers.com and watch the video. The creators of 3D Bunkers is looking for a business partner that can help bring this technology to the world. And we need to protect our way of life without living in fear. Contact Brad at 3DBunkers.com for more details or visit 3DBunkers.com.
Oh yeah. Getting back with you. Getting right back with you, friends, here on RBN. Thanks for hanging through the break with us, because we've got more to come. Chris Emery, a special guest on the show today, Lightspeed. You can visit his website at freemindfilms.com, and you can see A Noble Lie, the film we've been talking about. We're going to get into the explosives and explosions and why they don't match the narrative. And, friends, the Clintons were involved with this, and then you have Merrick Garland. Where does that name ring a bell? Yes, your attorney general was directly involved in all of this and has never answered for it. And we've got a lot of problems with the whole story that go way, way back. These people are lifetime criminals, deviants, working in your government to terrorize you and pass laws that restrict your freedoms, friends. This is the way it's worked all along. You know, if you're aware of 9/11, the Patriot Act, well, this goes back before Chris goes back before. Chris, we were talking about A Noble Lie, the explosive device. Everything that we have there that doesn't match the story of the truck bomb and all that kind of stuff. You did the digging. You found these documents. Stephen Jones, the attorney, was forced to move the trial to Denver, here in Denver, where all kinds of corruption goes on in the state, the district court here. But anyhow, go ahead, buddy, and just kind of fill us in, and let's go on with the story.
Well, getting back to the actual explosives that took the building down, one of the first things that I did even before I moved to Oklahoma City was, again, I explained this on another show, was to find anything that would support the official narrative. And I spent the better part of 6 months and almost $6,000 And my boss at the production studio that I worked at in Fort Worth, we did biographical documentaries, training videos, honorarium retirement videos for dignitaries in town and so forth. And he says, if you can't find anything, he says, you have to put your narrative together based on facts, and you have to take a complete detour and go in a direction where you can find this information. And it was amazing. For the next 8.5 years, we had local, county, state, and federal law enforcement that knew that there was more to the story. And a lot of them were very upset, the fact that they either were ordered to lie, had no choice because of their career, their well-being, and some of them even put their lives on the line, and that's no exaggeration, to try to get the truth out on this. They show up for work every day, they carry their sidearm and their badge, and they said, no, I'm not going to lie for anybody. This is what happened. You guys are going to be our lightning rod. You're going to be our conduit, and this is the information we have. A lot of them asked to stay anonymous, which we to this day, we still respect that. People will try to ask, well, who said this? And they said, no. This is a code of honor that we had with the people that came forward. Some others wanted to get on film, and we did put them on there. We taped over 6.5 hours of footage for that film, and we had to narrow it down to 2 hours and 8 seconds. Why? Because we were an unknown film crew. There's no way we were going to market a film even at 2 hours. Our buddies in L.A., I'll never forget this, about a month before we released it, they said, look, good luck. Nobody knows who you are, 2-hour film. We entered 42 film festivals, spent almost $5,200 just on entry fees alone, which is about an average of $125 a pop. And we were accepted in 10. We received Best Picture in 4 and a finalist at 2. And we were like a deer in headlights. We had no idea. We knew it was a good film. We weren't arrogant. We weren't resting on our laurels. We just knew we had to get this out there. And our colleagues, who were complete strangers to us, we had no idea who they were, say, hey, you guys did a great job. We had no idea, the information was put forward in a great professional way. So having said that, to go back to your question, one of the first things that we had to determine was the building blown up the way that was the official narrative stated? And
right.
This is no.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because of the eyewitnesses. We had 12 people on the 9th floor of that building, the top floor, taking a Windows 95 class. Now remember, this is April 95, the very first introduction to Windows. Beta version had just been approved in March of that year, and bam, they hit the market that first week of April. So what these employees were doing, just imagine being at your desk at 9 o'clock in the morning. The building starts shaking. Well, what are you going to do? You think it's an earthquake? They do have earthquakes in Oklahoma, not often as San Francisco or some of the coastal cities. So they hit the dirt. They hit the ground. They went under their desks. 5 to 8 seconds after that, the windows blow in. So you anybody with a clear mind and a halfway, a decent train of thought, common sense, could say, okay, obviously something was going on before that truck bomb blew up. It just makes sense. And my engineering background, when I was at the University of Wisconsin at Madison, when I had my photography business, I was also a full-time student there. And I studied civil engineering and environmental design, the structure and the content of commercial bridges and buildings. So I knew when I saw that the eyewitness testimony coming across their desk and the written affidavits, this is controlled demolition. What we found out was there were 23 devices in that building. 3 had gone off. The building was literally coming down from the east side to the west side. It was designed to literally crumble on itself. Thank God the other 20 devices were actually destroyed in the initial blast. Why? Because there was a delay timer. In military tactics, you don't blow up all of the devices at once. They will offset each other and basically become a giant dud. So these devices were set to go off in a matter of about 3 minutes. Well, the initial blast destroyed the timing and the switchers on the other devices and rendered them inert. And how do we know that? Well, the Oklahoma County Bomb Squad went in there 10 to 20 minutes after the initial blast, when search and rescue and search and recovery were going in there to get the dead and the walking wounded. And they said, wow, where are these devices? What are these doing here? And
yeah, we'll get back to that. Chris got out of break. Yeah. Hang on to that thought. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. You're going to want to hear more.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news. Real talk, real people, because you can handle the truth.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company? And it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks.
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Traveler's Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home.
Email Tom at republicbroadcasting.org. T-O-M at republicbroadcasting.org.
Getting right back into the show today because we've got such a great guest, Chris Emery. We're going to talk about the explosive devices that were used in Oklahoma City and how there were so many of them, as many as 20, I guess, is what Chris was saying, did not go off, and they were disposed of in a very suspicious way. The Clintons were involved with this. Merrick Garland was involved with this. The whole trial was moved out of Oklahoma City so they could cover up what happened. You heard about Julian West. You know, the MK Ultra expert was involved in this. Tim McVeigh. We'll just pick it up where we left off. And Chris, go ahead and, you know, kind of can take us on through.
By the way, I wanted to, let me just take a go off script here for 1 second. I want to thank early on John Stettmiller and everybody at RBN. If it wasn't for you guys and several other networks, there's no way we would have gotten the exposure. So I want to encourage your listeners to support your show and the station in general, any of the other hosts that they have, because this is a very important network. And I say this going back almost 20 years. We had to learn our way and find our direction. And if it wasn't for RBN and GCN and of course InfoWars gave us a massive exposure. So you're an integral part of the media. Thank you for what you're doing. So and I don't take these interviews for granted. We've done well over 500, and I'm not bragging, but I mean time it adds up after a while. We never take an interview for granted. So thank you for your time. Anyway, getting back to the narrative that we found out was, okay, there were 23 devices, three had gone off, and the three that had gone off were actually on the east side of the building where the major gouge was. And there's another thing that contributed to the damage to that building a lot of people weren't aware of. We had a great contact with the GSA office out of Fort Worth, which is about a 3.5 hour drive south of Oklahoma City. He gave us access to the plans, 9 pages of the blueprints, of the full set that was in a, get this, it was still in a vault at the GSA office in downtown Fort Worth. Even eight and a half years after the bombing, we still would have had to pay the full $3,500 for that set of blueprints. And I said, well, that's insane. This building's been buried in 4 different landfills outside of Oklahoma City. I said, why can't we just get a set of blueprints for free? And he said his bosses still had the thumbscrews on that. They were given orders by the Justice Department not to give out the blueprints. What does that tell you?
Right.
They don't want people like us coming around, you know, nosing around trying to put the picture back together. And that's exactly what we were doing. So what did he do? Christmas Eve of 2003, he gives me that set of 9 pages. I met him at just a short order restaurant in downtown Fort Worth. And on Christmas Eve, and he says, Merry Christmas. He says, please don't ever call me again. But I want you guys to have this. Good luck. And that's what we used. We scanned some of those, actually, for the film. But what those blueprints helped us do was figure out, okay, we knew where the devices were. And sources at Tinker Air Force Base, massive materiel and maintenance hub for the U.S. Air Force, south of Oklahoma City, we were able to find out that the bombing happens at 9.02 a.m. on the 19th. Between 2 and 3 a.m. the following morning on the 20th, which is less than 24 hours after the bombing, there is a modified C-21 Learjet that leaves. We saw the fuel allocation logs on the flight manifest. When the wheels up and when they landed at Kirtland Air Force Base in Albuquerque. And on the previous interview, I told you, why Kirtland, of all things? Well, that's an 8.5 hour drive. They made it there in 42 minutes on a Learjet, flying all 20 of those devices that were unexploded to take them to Kirtland at a special facility underground where they tore them apart, literally analyzed it. They figured out what it cost, where the material came from, who made them, when they were made. This wasn't off-the-shelf stuff you could get at Ace Hardware. This is professional military-grade devices.
Yeah.
Something that obviously had nothing to do with the alleged ANFO truck bomb. So just take that whole narrative and set that aside. So as a film crew, we're looking at each other like, oh my God, how do you get this out in a film and make it palatable so the viewer doesn't think that you're smoking dope? I mean, it was that over the top. But we knew that we had the facts there. We just had to put it in a palatable form, and I think we did a pretty good job of that in the film.
Yeah, you really did. And, of course, these explosive devices are the key to understanding. Just like it is with 9/11, you know, we know these buildings didn't just come down because of gravity and airplanes and jet fuel. You know, it was controlled demolition is what it was. And we were lucky, I guess, some of the people who were actually, like you talked about, up on the eighth floor survived, you know, this explosion. Mm-hmm. Had those other devices gone off, everybody would have been killed. And so, as a result, we know the truck bomb was a complete fraud. They were trying to paint up domestic terrorists as a problem, and Tim McVeigh was going to be the person, Terry Nichols, and they had to move this whole trial to Denver outside of Oklahoma City because they couldn't really get away with it in the state of Oklahoma, right?
Correct, and Stephen Jones told me that he did file several motions to quash the movement. He wanted it in western Oklahoma. There's a federal a district there in western Oklahoma, not far from Sayre, not far from the Texas border. And it would have been held there. But no, Merrick Garland, and we call him the Dirty 30, including, and I say this without reservation, we know that Frank Keating, the governor of Oklahoma at the time, had an integral part in this.
Yeah.
And he was part of what we call the Dirty 30 that made sure that that trial was moved to Denver. Oddly enough, we did interview, and unfortunately we weren't able to put him in the film because of time constraints. But a gentleman by the name of Harmon Taylor, still remains a good friend of mine, he lives in North Dallas, was actually working for the IRS in their facility in Denver during the trials. And he told me several years later, when he filed a motion, before they even went to, before McVeigh's execution, filed a motion to stay that execution so two of the people in our trailer, Jane Graham and V.Z. Lawton, could actually speak to him. These people came within an inch of their lives. They wanted to talk to the person that tried to kill them, and the federal government did not let that happen, and they executed McVeigh. But
right.
What I'm getting at is that, getting back to the trial, Harmon told me, and that 400-page motion that he filed with the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals in Chicago was the third time since the Civil War that they got a motion like that. Mm-hmm. And it was his motion that stayed that execution of McVeigh for 30 days. A lot of people don't know that. Ashcroft and George Bush lied about it through their teeth. They said, oh, this is, you know, evidence that wasn't turned over by the defense, like, no, or the prosecution. That wasn't it at all. But no. The point is that he told me that trial, every single ruling and every single motion in that trial, since it was in Denver, is basically moot. It was null and void. That trial on the books and in case law basically doesn't amount to a hill of beans. And no, it should have been tried in Oklahoma.
Now, they covered it up. They covered it up, Prince. And, you know, Merrick Garland was very much involved in this. And let's talk about Tim McVeigh. You know, he has quite a background. There's questions as to whether he was really executed, Prince. And but how he wasn't in favor of being a part of something that was going to kill people and go live during the working hours. He was thinking they were going to set this bomb off, and then he was coerced into participating in it, as I understand it. And tell us the whole story about McVeigh there, Chris.
Okay, well, here again, and this is a common name, and a lot of folks aren't aware of this. Don't ever forget this. Burn this in your memory by the name of Larry Potts, P-O-T-T-S. Yeah. Larry goes way back. He's a pretty dark individual. And the first time that his name popped up, I was with Wendy, the gal who was doing the research at the archives at the University of Texas in Austin. Larry's name comes up in a Dallas Morning News article because he was involved with the Ruby Ridge shootout, which was horrible.
Right.
The first sniper team that came in from Denver said, no, this is beyond our rules of engagement. We're not taking part in this. They walked off. It took a sniper team out of Philadelphia to do that, headed by one of their elite snipers, Lon Herucci. Well, where does Larry Potts come back? He rears his ugly head in with Waco. Lon Herucci was one of the drivers of the two tanks that pierced that building and pumped in sarin gas, which is prohibited by the Geneva Convention. So these guys are stepping in at every single step of the way on all of these darn cases.
Yeah.
So what is, and it was Eric Holder. This is very important to understand. Eric Holder was a U.S. district attorney at the time, out of New York. He had to recuse himself from Larry Potts being put on trial for his malfeasance with the Ruby Ridge case. And it's there on the Dallas Morning News article. And I thought, holy crap, these guys just don't know how to stay out of trouble if their life depended on it.
Yep.
I mean, it's a consistent pattern. So that was my point. But Larry Potts was also McVeigh's handler. And Larry basically said, look, the building was originally supposed to be blown up the night before on April 18th at 9 o'clock. Larry Potts says, we're moving it 12 hours ahead, and we want a body count. And McVeigh says, oh, hell no. He says, I'm a professional assassin and a drug smuggler, which he was for 2.5 years with the CIA. He says, I don't kill innocent women and children. That's not what I do. And Potts says, look, we got you over the barrel for weapon smuggling. I mean, they could have thrown the book at him. And
yeah.
McVeigh had no choice. But he went in there begrudgingly doing that. And he didn't want to do that originally.
Some people doubt whether he was actually executed. I'll leave that up to subjective opinions. But the bottom line is, you got the dirty 30. You got Merrick Garland, Larry Potts, all these other people, Eric Holder. And then everything had to be moved to Denver so they could sanitize it and paint this story around it. Because the people in Oklahoma knew what really happened there. And as you found out later on, there were a lot of people who wanted to tell the truth and were held back from doing it and still under a problem speaking openly about it, right?
Exactly. Now, the FBI field office in Oklahoma City, we had IT techs, we had secretaries, we had other individuals that worked on the civilian side of the operation. They were absolutely amazing what they brought forth for us. The local police department, Oklahoma City Police Department, the county sheriffs, the Oklahoma Highway State Patrol, and the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation. Most every state has their counterpart to the FBI. Oklahoma has the OSBI. And they were pulling in intel that they got from a contact they had with the Japanese Yakuza and the mob for the Chinese government. And can you imagine?
An unknown
film crew, we're getting this intel. And we had to parse it and put it together in a way that, yes, this makes sense and this is why. And it was a mosaic that we painted, and we're just very blessed to be able to at least reveal a third of what we had on that film. Now, McVeigh, the reason we don't think that he's executed, and this is coming from the contact we had at the CIA, who since worked for, he retired with the OSBI. He says, Chris, can you imagine the CIA trying to recruit if they know that they're going to kill off their assets if they screw up or they go into an operation you know, sideways. McVeigh didn't want to be part of this. He didn't want it to go live and kill people. He wanted to blow out a few windows and maybe destroy a statue. So that was, and it's like, yeah, you don't kill off your assets like that. And the CIA doesn't do that. That's not their mode of operation. So we think that he went into basically an elevated form of witness protection program, the CIA's version of that, and never to be seen again. He's, you know, plastic surgery, you name it. It's been, he probably went through it all, and he's probably living somewhere that, you know, in a small, nondescript town somewhere, probably in a foreign country.
Right. He had the dirt on all of them because he actually worked for Schwarzkopf, right? He was a Cracker Jack sniper, right?
He was on their security detail for the first Persian Gulf War. One of two tank gunners, the 50 cal, he could take you out 800 yards downrange, just pop your head right off. Two shots, wow. Double tap you, and you're gone. So he got two letters, actually two medals of commendation while he was awaiting trial at the courthouse in Denver. And we found out through the defense counsel, looking through the records, what they did, they didn't transfer McVeigh from the county lockup to the federal courthouse every day for trial. They actually built him a small hotel room, equivalent of what you'd find in a Motel 6, literally 40 feet from the courtroom. They built him, you know, he had his cot, he got three scores a day, watched a little TV, threw a couple of newspapers and magazines at him every day, and that was it. And he did that that walk to the courtroom. It saved on security, and it was tight because there were a lot of people that, he was a marked man, you know, rightfully so. So, but we found out that there were 12 to 18 people involved. McVeigh had very little to do with it, and Nichols was just straight out framed. And that's why I still have a bone to pick with Merrick Garland, because he helped instrumental and helped frame Terry Nichols. They were manufacturing evidence to fit the narrative versus the other way around. It was horrible. Yeah. And, you know, there were times that this, Steve, there were times that this was so over the top. That I says, my God, I mean, how can a government, a Justice Department even do this and think that they can get away with this? And then again, when we saw J6 pull out, he says, oh boy, here we are. They're rolling out the same bag of dirty tricks, taking it to a whole new level. And who's in charge of it? Merrick Garland.
Yeah, these criminals that have gotten into these positions of government and are being covered up by their damn news media. I call them the lying legacy media, friends. You know, they're losing control of the population, but it's because of networks like this, because of great producers like yourself, Chris, so many good films. All of us are teaming up together. We have to stand up to this because it's only going to keep getting worse, just like with HIV as it progressed to COVID. Fauci has been around all these years. The same people, Merrick Garland, you know, now, there was connections also to the Clintons that were being covered up in this, as well as Oliver North, weren't there?
Yes, Oliver North, actually, we found out through, there was an office. In fact, I can still drive there today. It's two doors down from a high-end Rolex jewelry store on Park Avenue. And I have no problem saying that on the air. Anybody, a gumshoe detective, wants to go down there. That, of course, it's changed names and storefronts, but... there was a small office, very just, again, nondescript. Ollie North ran the his operation, at least a good majority of it, through Oklahoma City at this office in downtown, about five blocks from where the bomb site was. And for almost 4 years, he was basically set up there. Well, who would think Oklahoma City would be anything? It's, again, it's just a spot on the map. Perfect cover. And so the... we found out through Dr. Frederick Whitehurst, who was the head of the FBI lab, who actually befriended us as a film crew and several people on the Oklahoma Bombing Investigation Committee that helped us get this, the outline for this film together. He flat out told us that that office was run by professional assassins. These guys were so far off the chain that the CIA didn't even want to deal with them. They couldn't even rein these guys in. Can you imagine how wild that would be? And he says, don't you, under any circumstance, don't ever go to those offices because they have no problem. And I'm going to say this on the air. He says, they have no problem coming up to you in broad daylight, regardless of the day or time, and double tapping you in the back of the head and walking away. Mm-hmm. And like I said, the CIA is like, no, we don't even want to deal with these guys. They worked with Ollie North in that office for those 4.5 years. They still had limited operations. And we caught up with that office about 6 months after they left. And then I explained on that other show, they had rolled up carpet. The window blinds were kind of jankety and all, you know, kind of cattywampus hanging at an angle. We were able to look into that office and see that there was phone wire carpet there. And you could see on the door on the outline where the adhesive was for the letters under the shell company they had running under that office. And when Dr. Whitehurst found out about us going there, he yelled at us on the speakerphone. He says, guys, I can't say this more than enough. Don't ever cross paths with these guys. Because he knew of what they did with the FBI back in the day. Even as the head of the crime lab, he had analyzed some of the their mess that they had to clean up for these guys. And he said, no, they don't care at all. So we crossed paths 6 months later, obviously, of where they were. So we knew how deep and how dark this thing got. And it wasn't two disgruntled GIs blowing up an anthro bomb in front of a building. This was international in scope. And the guys out of those offices were hired to clean up the mess and mop up the mess afterwards. And they would stop at nothing to do that.
Yeah, just astounding how so many people can sell their souls to this globalist world power in this huge international conspiracy, for instance, which is what it is. And we still want to believe in our freedoms, our constitutional rights. That's what RBN is all about. That's what great producers and people like Chris are doing to alert us to what's been really going on all this time. And the public just seems like they're in shell shock. They can't see these things happening like they need to. And, you know, are we ever going to get politicians? Are we ever going to get people like church pastors to begin to talk about what's really going on here? I mean, it's a creeping darkness that really is frightening, in my opinion. I've never seen anything growing up in the 60s. It was bad enough. But, I mean, things have just gone completely out of control now, haven't they?
They have. Speaking of remember the first case that you mentioned on my biography? It was the Sterling Hall bombing of Madison. And I remember I was in town for 3 weeks as a 10-year-old. We just moved to Madison from out of state. My dad took a new job in a small town outside of the city. And we were driving past that blast site, and it looked like downtown Beirut. There was anti-war demonstrations going on. Remember, this is August of 1970, and the height of all of that. Between Berkeley and Madison, they were tearing it up pretty good. And I remember my mom was crying. We were in a brand-new Chevrolet, and my brother and I are looking out the back door wondering, as a 10 and an 8-year-old, what the hell just happened? Little did I know that would be, 23 years later? Actually 33 years later, that I would be interviewing one of the co-conspirators on that case. Again, the synchronicity. And it was his interview that said, look, there's no way that Oklahoma City could have happened the way it did with ANPO. Why? Because he used ANPO at the Sterling Hall bombing. So it was God's way of bringing me back to cross the path with this guy, and it was proof positive between his testimony interview and what we interviewed General Parton in the film, and both of those guys coming from completely different backgrounds verified each other's story. So, and Merrick Garland is absolutely disgusting. He should be ashamed of himself for what he did just on this case alone, along with Louis Freeh, the governor of Oklahoma, and yes, the handlers for the Clintons. Bill Clinton knew damn well what happened in that case, and he chose use it as political hay, as basically an advantage to his whole campaign and his career. So,
yeah, absolutely. Anyway. They dressed it up like domestic terrorism, friends, and that was part of the Omnibus Terrorism Act that followed shortly thereafter as well. So they're painting us up as the criminals of the things that they are doing, just like they've constantly done. The projection of evil on the righteous is what it is by these filthy people that need to be caught. They need to be held accountable. It's going on in every aspect of everything we're working in, from the financial sector to the military industrial complex, as you now know, the medical industrial complex, World Health Organization, all these people, including Ukraine. You know, time is going by so quick, but we do have a little bit of time. We got one more break, I think it is, before the show's over. But I want to make sure people know where to get your information, though, Chris, first. FreeMindFilms.com. FreeMindFilms.com. You can see the Noble Lie there. You can also order DVDs to help Chris and the company going along if you want to get that done. And you can go down. I was going to have a video interview, but I mean, there's some great ones. If you scroll down, you got renowned filmmaker Paul Wittenberger. He's reviewing Shadow Ring, which is another one of the films, and another interview with Chris on there. And also, one Schroyer's got a clip that you can listen to as well if you want to follow up a little bit more. We're going to have Chris back because he's out there working on some other things. Any other things you want to kind of finish up with in the last minute or two?
Well, I do want to do a shout out to Paul Wittenberger. He continues to buy DVDs from us. Believe it or not, there's about a 20% market share. People still watch those DVDs on their gaming platforms. And I'm in my studio right now looking at the poster for the very first episode. He had a five-part series, was able to release three of those. And it was COVID-land, the lockdown. And we were very blessed to help him redo the artwork for that poster from the actual DVD cover. Our graphic artist and I spent some time doing that. So we're very honored to have the only poster that he's ever sold of his series. And I have it hanging very proudly and prominently here in my studio. But Paul does great work. I always try to give thumbs up and proffers to my colleagues who do a wonderful job. I'm not the only one out there. So please support his work, and you can do so by buying the DVDs off of our website. And there's many others that have done great work on and Alex Jones and his crew. My God, again, in our second film, we interviewed Alex. I remember sitting in front of him for over 2.5 hours with a couple of breaks in his studio. And I thought, wow, I wasn't starstruck, but I thought, what do you do to get to this point to be able to talk to these people and interviewers like you? So it's a ripple effect, people. You know, you just help each other out. Don't ever underestimate the power of one, I guess is what I'm trying to get at.
Right on. Well, we sure appreciate you taking the time. And thanks to Julie. We had to skip a break, but we wanted to keep you on and talking as long as we could because Chris is a very busy guy, as you can tell, and he'll be back. You know, what about Maui and Lahaina and some of these things? Just very briefly. We've got maybe a minute.
Okay. There's more and more information coming out now, and I've talked to some confidential sources out there that initially wanted me to do a film. We're pretty much on a holding pattern on that. People, you have to understand that it was military-grade directed energy weapons that actually started that. The official body count is, what, 14? And sources of mine through FEMA said, no, there was well over 1,100 people killed there. It was horrendous, absolutely horrendous. It's disgusting. You remember who you're dealing with. We're on the island of Maui, but within the Hawaiian Islands, you have Hickam Air Force Base, you've got Pearl Harbor, the Navy base, and then you've got the Schofield Barracks, the Army post. So it's some pretty resolute military power there to keep this thing buttoned down and quashed and the truth to come down. But the truth is going to come out. It will. And don't lose faith because we need to tell the story about what happened to those people and the truth versus a lie.
That's right. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been Chris Emery joining us today. He will be back. He's been on the network before. He's making the rounds. He's very busy. Wanted to thank him for his time. Visit freemindfilms.com. Look at the films. Get the trailers. Watch what you can help and support where you can help support the network because we'll have him back. And he is staying on top of all of these things. We talked a lot about Oklahoma City, but we could go into other details about some of these other things that have happened that haven't been fully explored like they need to be. But it's always been a pleasure and a privilege to be with you, friends, on Monday here on Lightspeed. Thanks so much, Chris. We'll be looking forward to what you got coming out next. Stay with us and stay in tune, and we'll have you back again. Okay, buddy?
Thank you, Steve. Well, God bless. Keep up the great work, brother.
All right. You too, brother. Hey, thanks so much to all of you. And thanks, Julie, for doing a great show today. Stay tuned to RBN, and we're going to keep doing what we do the best, and that's telling you the truth that the news media will not do. We'll see you again next Monday. Bye-bye now.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.